we're not going to be able to work with a smaller, cheaper company. We'll have to get a company to come in from Kyoto, wherever the property might be located, right? So that's why it would cost a little bit more, but it's not gonna. The things that make a renovation more expensive are more related to how accessible the property itself is. So, for example, if the accessway leading up to it is very narrow, very steep, and they can't drive the trucks with all the equipment there, then they'll have to park down the hill and carry everything by hand. That's when it starts getting very expensive.
I see.
If the land is
Okay.
sloped and everything they build on it requires supports, then that becomes expensive. It's more a layout of the land and the property itself than the distance from a city. Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, quick reminder, as always during this period, tickets for the Japan Real Estate Summit in Tokyo and online via streaming are selling fast. If you know you're available and would like to join us on Saturday and Sunday, 12, 13 April, in exactly 2 weeks, either in person or online, and you still haven't, now's the time to book your tickets. So our amazing speakers, Emil Gorgis, Tracy Northcott, Blanca Kobayashi, Shu Matsuo Post, Brett Lee, Chai Kanda, Hiroshi Shimizu, Anton Warman, Matt Ketchum, Matthew Kyle, Alicia Wang, and of course myself, are all super excited to see and speak with you all, answer all of your questions, and of course enjoy the gala dinner and other party dinners and drinks with you all. All made possible by our awesome sponsors, Innovatius, Shiki Properties, Axolotl Capital, and Kaku Accounting. If you haven't done that yet, again, I'll pause the podcast right now and get yourselves over to summit.realestate.jp and secure those tickets right now. All right, so for today's episode, this is a conversation with a potential client who's on a very tight budget. They've only got about 3 million Japanese yen or 20,000 US dollars or so. And he'd like to know what kind of investment properties, if any, he could purchase for as low as that. What short-term or monthly rentals would be feasible at all, particularly if purchasing a condo unit, which might be the best use of his funds in such a low budget. But also wondering if a holiday home would be possible for around the same price. That then also led us to talk a bit about renovations and repairs, especially in more rural areas and in locations with more difficult access. And we then chat a bit about growth potential. Is there any such thing possible when paying such a low price for a property? And if not, if the budget was higher, what locations would be best for potential capital growth? We also talk about the option of securing a loan as a non-resident investor or buyer in Japan. What property profiles would be best to consider if the budget was higher, what tenants might look like, and how property management works for these different types of rentals, long, monthly, or short term, and how tenancy laws generally work in Japan overall. We share some horror stories about things that could go wrong with Japanese tenants, which can be very different to what you'd expect in other countries, insurance policies and what they cover, what happens if and when a tenant dies in a property, which is always a concern with Japan's aging population. And then finally, a bit about the new minimum commission that realtors are now charging in Japan and how that's affected the lower end of the property market, how to get started with your very first purchase, due diligence, how that might differ between houses and condos, monthly management fees and other fees that are due when a tenant moves out, how to receive rental income and pay expenses as a non-resident. He also wanted to ask about our own experience investing in Japan, what we personally tend to buy usually. So we had a bit of a chat about that. And he also has cats, just like we do. So you might see a tail cross your screen every now and again. Hope you enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Okay, so I've just had a quick peek at your original email again. Budget 15 to 20, yeah. That's really scraping the bottom of the barrel there. Are you sure that's your max budget? Because that's going to buy you a shack in the woods kind of thing.
Yes. I'm aware it is quite on the lower side. My liquid capital, I would say at the maximum is 3 million yen. But I guess find some sort of diamond in the rough, but I'm also not trying to cash flow right away immediately when I purchased the property. So I wanted to just, that's why I reached out to you to see, reach out to your expertise on, you know, with my budget and what kind of possibilities are available to me.
For Airbnb, I'd say nothing. If you're really looking to a property that you can rent out, that's way too low. So 20,000 US at the moment is... $3 million, yeah. So, I mean, even if it was a tiny little old condo unit in some very suburban slash rural town, that would still be pushing it to find something. And I mean, the houses that you'll find at this budget are not going to be moving ready. They're going to have some major issues. You can maybe, I don't know if you're the DIY type, you can maybe take, I don't know, the number of years that it would take you to try and renovate it on the cheap yourself with friends, with local carpenters, if you manage to get cozy with them. And maybe long term you can turn it into something. But my bigger concern at this budget is it's going to be, if it's houses, it's going to be houses that are at least 40 years old, probably closer to 50, 60 years old. And those would have major structural issues in most cases. So every property that is older than 30, we would strongly advise to conduct a structural inspection on. And if we find that it's tilting or sinking or termite tracks or the roof has issues, all of those things will cost you several times the price of the property again to repair. And each of those structural inspections will cost you about 1,000 US. So if we're focusing on properties at this price level, the likelihood of you having to pay for about 10 structural inspections or so before we land on the one that's actually kind of okay, 10 inspections, that's like 30% of your budget again, right? I would strongly, you're the boss, we'll help you buy whatever you want, but at this budget, I would strongly advise to save up a little bit more.
Right. And you know, I've been watching your YouTube videos and most recent podcasts, and a lot of the investors bring on about, at least on average, minimum 8 to 12 million.
Correct.
Right. And I do understand, like, yes, there is like a threshold to where, you know, you need a minimum amount of money in order to have some sort of decent cash flow.
Well, it's not so much the cash flow as much as you're saying this is your budget. So if this is your budget, that means, I'm assuming that means you don't have extra money for renovations and repairs, right? So you're going to buy and what? Wait another 7-8 years to start having money to renovate and repair it, to make it livable slash presentable to guests. Why not just wait and buy something younger? If you need to save up for renovation, why not save up to buy something a bit younger instead?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, and that is true. So, like, minimum amount of money would say you would recommend about 8 million.
That's when they start to potentially be more move-in ready. Yes. I mean, we have customers who have purchased for 5, 6 million if it's a house, maybe even 4 or 5 million if it's a condo unit. But with condo units, you can't rent them out short term, only maybe monthly, and only if the building owner union is not too aggressive about resisting that. So technically, short-term stay, owner unions need to specify in the rule book that they allow short-term stay. Otherwise, Airbnb is not going to take your listings and you're not going to get a short-term stay license. Monthly rentals legally are classified as normal rentals, so the owner union can't prohibit it, but they can make life very difficult for the property manager who's servicing the property and for the guests themselves. They can, suddenly knock on the door late at night and say, are you renting this on Airbnb? You're not allowed. I mean, it's not a pleasant situation, and you're not going to get high occupancy rates once the building gets a reputation for that. So, if you want to look for a tiny little hotel room sized condo unit in an older building in a very small city that you can use yourself to crash in when you come here, that's maybe doable, but it's not going to be a nice location. Anything that you want to rent out would have to be presentable and move-in ready and not, falling apart at the seams. So with condo units, I'd start at 5, 6 million, and with houses at 8, 9 million. Yeah.
A9, okay.
Yeah.
So what if it's let's look at it from a different perspective. Let's say, what if it's not, I'm not looking for an investment cash flow property. What if I'm looking for something that is more for me and my family to come and, like, to come visit Japan, come stay for, some sort of vacation home.
How many people will be coming at a given time, do you think, will need to stay at the property together?
Oh, about 2 to 3.
Are they okay with a tiny little single studio bedroom kind of business hotel size property? Then, yeah, maybe we can find something for them. If it's a house, again, I mean, we can find houses for this amount, and they might have the floor space to make it a bit more comfortable for 2, 3, 4 people, but again, I'm concerned about the structural integrity, that's all. So we'll keep looking at them and we'll keep doing structural inspections, and eventually we'll probably land on one that's not so bad. I'm just wondering how many we'll have to go through before we get to there, and how many inspections we'll have to conduct, because again, they each cost about $1,000. I mean, look, if you totally don't care and you're just buying it for the land and, run the house to the ground and, live with it until it, comes crashing down, and then think about what to do with it, then yeah, we can buy anything you want.
I guess what I also wanted to ask you was, outside of, the main prefectures and, the main hotspots for investment, like Tokyo or Osaka, what do you see as areas that have, like, a really good potential of, based on population growth, based on maybe high tourism levels, but are a little bit more outside of the city and not too rural, where renovating will be a challenge? Because I know, I underst from my understanding is, let's say you want to fully renovate a property, one of the biggest challenges is finding contractors to available contractors, reputable contractors to help renovate the property if you're too rural.
No, we can get renovation, repair, maintenance companies anywhere in Japan. They might have to come in from the nearest big city. So as long as you're not, more than an hour and a half away from a big city, that's all feasible. That that's not a concern, and from my perspective, we can find people to do the job wherever it might be. It's just might cost a bit more if they have to drive longer distances to get there.
So just a little, the longer the distance, the increase of the costs.
Yeah, but I mean, not to a huge extent. It's more a case of the cost will be increased not so much because of the driving, but because we're not going to be able to work with a smaller, cheaper company. We'll have to get a company to come in from Kyoto, wherever the property might be located, right? So that's why it would cost a little bit more, but it's not gonna. The things that make a renovation more expensive are more related to how accessible the property itself is. So, for example, if the accessway leading up to it is very narrow, very steep, and they can't drive the trucks with all the equipment there, then they'll have to park down the hill and carry everything by hand. That's when it starts getting very expensive.
I see.
If the land is
Okay.
sloped and everything they build on it requires supports, then that becomes expensive. It's more a layout of the land and the property itself than the distance from a city.
Okay. So it's not so much the distance, it's just the accessibility to the
Of
property.
that particular property, yeah. Region-wise, we
Okay.
can get renovators anywhere. It's just a matter of where they'll be coming from.
Okay. I guess with that in consideration, it kind of opens up a little bit more possibility to properties a little further out of the major cities.
Yeah, but again, if short-term stay or medium stay is a concern, then the further you are from anywhere that anyone wants to go, the less guests you're going to have, right? So your vacancy rates will be a lot higher. But if, again,
Okay.
if the criteria is to have a place for yourselves to enjoy and then, kind of see what we can do in it with it when we're not there, then we'll aim for whatever we can get you that you'll be comfortable with and see what we can do with it when you're not there.
I see. Okay. I guess another question I had was the main priority would be a property for my family or, for close relations to perhaps have a place to stay in Japan. But also with maybe some little potential of an area with some potential of some growth, maybe some population growth, maybe there's some potential for
Not within your
development.
budget, man. I'm sorry. That's
Oh,
not going to
really?
happen. No, this budget, the reason you can afford properties at this budget is because they're in locations that are going downhill, not uphill. Prices have not gone up in ages, and all they do is, decrease as the structures get older. At this budget, you're not going to be anywhere near an attractive location that might gain in value. I'm sorry. I
So
mean,
with
again,
my but
you could buy a tiny little older condo unit for this price. That would maybe be in suburban Osaka or the far outskirts of Fukuoka City, for example. So that's kind of an attractive location, but those properties won't gain in value because the building is already getting very old, right? So it's very unlikely that anywhere this suburban and this old will gain in value. If you were starting at around, again, for condo units 5, 6, for houses 8, 9, then we could maybe get a little bit closer to city centers, and then the property might potentially gain in value if and when that particular area gains in value. But I mean, I wouldn't bank on Japan gaining in value anywhere. It's been good for the last 13, 14 years, but that's on the back of 25 years of deflation. If it happens, fantastic. It's been going all right so far. But considering the working force population is shrinking, at the same level or faster than GDP growth, then I don't see that as a long-term plan. It'd be great if it continues like it has been in the last 13 years, but I'm very much hesitating to tell anyone that they can count on that.
I see. Okay. So unless unless you have enough investment capital to invest in some sort of near-ish distance to like a major prefecture or major city,
Look,
then
potential equity or capital growth is directly related to the location of the property and the size of the land plot, because the land is the only thing that can hold or gain in value. The structures always decrease in value.
Going down,
Yeah, so if you bought a house anywhere within a big city, or if you bought a condo unit in very close proximity to the center of a big city, then yes, they stand to gain in value. But anything else, anyone's guess.
Then
Sorry, I'm not.
second.
I don't mean to give you only bad news. I just want you to walk into this with eyes open, kind of thing.
No, and that's why I love your channel. You're very transparent with knowledge to back it up, and I really appreciate it.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So, really, the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy. Fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
Let me throw you a curveball question.
Sure.
Let's say if you were in my situation and w with my budget, and you wanted to just find a, you wanted to find a decent property, not so much focused on the investment perspective, but just more so focused on the, I
Holiday
guess just
aspect.
the holiday aspect, the cultural aspect, things to do, maybe. Where would you, what areas would you look at?
I would look, so putting the condo slash house discussion aside for a moment, just talking about
Right.
location, I would go for Kurume City, which is about an hour south of Fukuoka City.
What, sorry, could you repeat that?
Kurume,
Udome?
Kurume, Kurume City. That's about an hour south of Fukuoka City. Suburban Kobe, which is about an hour from Osaka. I mean, once you get to central Kobe, it's about an hour from Osaka, but to get from suburban to central Kobe might take you another 30, 45 minutes. Hachioji, which is about an hour west of Tokyo. Maybe Chiba City, suburban Chiba City, if we're lucky. Some of the smaller townships on Izu Peninsula, the more kind of dying townships, but that's within an hour to Mount Fuji and about an hour and a half to Tokyo. That's all doable, I'd say.
Well, and can I ask why your first pick was Kurume? Like, why Kurume?
Oh, I'm just going from where I am. We're located in Kyushu, so I start from here and then I branch out. Sorry. I could have started the other way equally.
Okay. What aspects of Kurume is appealing to you?
Just nothing about Kurume itself, just the proximity to Fukuoka City. Fukuoka City is very appealing, but within Fukuoka City, your budget probably wouldn't allow.
Right, exactly.
So an hour west of Fukuoka is Itoshima, which is also getting a bit expensive. It's a very popular beach town. An hour to the east is Kitakyushu City, which could be affordable for you, but it's very industrial, blue collar, Not very interesting. Kurume is a comfortable city to live in, and it's only 40, 45 minutes to an hour to Fukuoka City, so kind of sweet spot. Same for Chiba City, right? An hour east of Tokyo, an hour from the airport, boring city, but close enough to other things. Those are the kind of locations I'm looking at. Kobe City is attractive enough. It's very popular with international expats living there, but that's only the area around the center. And that's quite expensive too, but the suburb, what they call beyond the mountain kind of thing, but it's still officially Kobe City to the north, and that area can be a bit cheaper. And Hachioji City, again, an hour west of Tokyo, nothing to speak of with the city itself, but very convenient commute to Tokyo itself.
That's interesting.
And all of those locations, the main reason I picked all of those locations is because they're a lot cheaper. They might fit within your budget. Like if we're talking about an hour from Tokyo, the nicer location would be Saitama City, which is 30 minutes north of Ueno Station in Tokyo. That's a great city. It's a lovely place to live, but that's not going to be within your budget, as in.
I've been scanning a little bit on Sumo and nothing below 5 million for a decent property, at least. Kurume. Let's see. And as a citizen of the United States, a foreigner investor, there are no really options for loans for an investor like myself.
There are, but they're not focused on the types of properties that you'll be able to afford. So with any investment loan, you'll need to put down 30, 40% in cash. And if your budget is 3 million, then if that's 40% in cash, that gives you less than 10 million to go for. Most of the properties that the lenders will consider lending for are not going to be 10 million yen properties. Some of them, like the ones that Alicia, you mentioned you watched Alicia's presentation at our summit. So the ones that Alicia are talking about usually start at about a million, sorry, Ichioku N, which is like a 700 something, 710.
Close upwards to like $1 million US.
Yes, and you need to put down 30, 40% of that in cash, right? Other
Okay.
lenders will consider less than that, but they're not going to consider properties as old as what you'd get for 10 million yen. They'll want them to be at least 20 years and younger, and then that's going to be pricier. So I don't know. Tough. Singapore, UOB Bank in Singapore, I'll send you the brochure on WhatsApp. They will lend, or at least last I spoke to them, which is a good few years ago, but I think they still got this product, and they will lend for properties, for condo units, non-landed properties, at lower budgets. That might be an option if we're looking at a condo unit, but that's the only option that I can think of. Hang on, let me just try to find that.
Only condo units.
Well, non-landed property is what they call it, which I'm assuming refers to condo units. So properties that don't come—I mean, condo units come with a portion of the building's land parcel, but not their own plot of land, and that they will lend for. But why, I don't know, because usually other lenders are actually the other way around. They say there has to be a land plot for something to maintain its value, but UOB, for some reason, are doing non-landed properties. So that's maybe a feasible option. There's contact details on the brochure. I just sent it to you online. You can just email them or call them directly and find out.
Appreciate
With
that.
lenders, we can't really help much because the lenders will always want to talk to the borrower directly. We can't act as your proxies when discussing things with lenders. They don't even want us to be in the room unless we're there to interpret for you. And most of the lenders will not want to take you on if you can't speak, read, write Japanese or Chinese, if they're with Bank of China, Starbank. But UOB in Singapore is an option. Shinsei Investment and Finance, which is a subsidiary of Shinsei Bank, are also an option, but they will want you to set up a local corporate entity for the borrowing. And that also comes with 3,000, 4,000 bucks a year in minimum corporate tax and accounting and bookkeeping and everything that you need for the corporate structure upkeep, right?
And so what would I need to set up a corporate entity in Japan?
You'll
Like,
need
what are
to
the minimum
pay
requirements?
2,000 to 3,000 bucks to set it up, and then 3,000 to 4,000 bucks a year in corporate upkeep, just minimum corporate tax, accounting, and bookkeeping again.
And do I have to be some sort of like LLC, or do I have to have some sort of business, have some sort of income
No, it's
in
just
Japan?
for the purpose of borrowing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so once if I can afford those costs, I can set up a corporate entity for myself, and then I would have a little bit ease of access into possible mortgage lending from Japanese
Yeah, but again,
banks.
they'll be looking at all of the lenders will only be looking at very specific attractive locations. So central
Right, because of
within the Yamanote Light,
liability.
yes, Tokyo, Osaka, Fukuoka,
Right,
maybe
they're not gonna let
Kyoto.
me they're not gonna let me a shack in the middle of the woods
No,
because
no. And the
it's a
property has
huge
to
loss for
be of a minimum age,
them.
and it has to be of a minimum distance to a station. And they also will not lend for holiday homes or short-term stay rentals. They will only lend for straight out long-term lease investments. So you'll have to get a tenant in there full time, and you're not going to be able to use it yourself at all.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I mean, you could get the loan under those terms and then kind of secretly do other things with it, but if they find out, they'll be within their legal rights to recall the loan, and that's probably a situation you don't want to be in.
All right, okay, and thank you. Loans were sort of a big question for me. In America right now, it's a little the loan requirements are a lot different from Japan, especially as a foreigner.
Well, the interest is insane in America, right?
It's come down slightly
Okay.
recently, but the interest rates in Japan are very nice, very
Yes,
attractive,
I
just
agree.
very hard to have access to as a foreigner.
Yeah. Well, the
Okay.
Singapore, I mean, talk to UOB. Their loan interest rates are very similar to what you'd get here as a non-resident foreigner. It's about, I think, 2.5 to 3.5%, maybe 3 to 3.5. I don't know. The brochure says.
That's
So
great.
that might be doable, and they will lend for potentially cheaper condo units. But you'll need to figure out with the locations and the 30-40% that you'll need to put money down if that works. And also, I mean, they're a foreign lender, so the chances of them finding out what you're actually doing with the property are probably lower, but they also will lend specifically for long-term investment leases.
I guess my options are a little bit limited based on my budget.
Man, everything you've told me so far leads me to the same conclusion. I would save for a few more years and start looking at stuff that you can, either stuff that you can buy outright that's of slightly better quality, or at least something that you'll be able to put down 30-40% on a loan and get a little bit more bang for your buck, right?
I
Or get some of those relatives who are going to be using the property to chip in too, no?
Okay. Right. Okay. And with like an with the purchase price, or if my purchase price was about 10 million, that would open up a lot more options.
Yes, it would. But also bear in mind that we've been discussing your total budget. I don't know if that's including purchase costs or not. Purchase costs can be another 15% on top of that.
Okay. That's about the same over here. And just from a curiosity aspect, outside of like major cities like Kyoto, Tokyo, or Osaka or Fukuoka, are there any other areas that you see having possible potential growth, or, not even in an investment aspect, but just be, in like population density or just like
I'd say Kumamoto City down here in Kyushu. TSM, the biggest chip manufacturer, built a huge factory there and started engineers and foreigners, foreign engineers started pouring into there, and now they've announced the second one that they're building. So that area's been on a lot of people's radars. Miyoko, which is a ski area in Nagano, from memory. Still potentially some slightly cheaper properties there, and that area is quite attractive to tour winter sports at least. Yeah, Saitama City is on the up and up. It's one of the areas we've mentioned it already. It's a half hour north of Tokyo. That's been growing in population a lot more than some of the cities, like more than Yokohama, percentage-wise. Numbers-wise, they're not nowhere near Yokohama, but percentage-wise, they've been rising a lot quicker than Chiba City, Yokohama City, even faster than some wards in Tokyo. That's an interesting place. And Itoshima, that we've mentioned before as well, an hour to the west, or 40, 30 to 45 minutes to the west of Fukuoka City. Some of the areas, some of the locations there have gone up in price significantly, but if you get a little bit further from the station and you're catering to people who are going to be driving, there are still some good deals to be had further away from the beach and towards the mountains there. Otaru, up in Hokkaido, Otaru is becoming more and more popular, and the Shinkansen line is being extended to go all the way there, so that will definitely bring up interest as well. That's about an hour west of Sapporo City. And but if you're buying in snow country, then maintenance expenses become higher, right? Just trying to think. Yeah, nothing that comes to mind. No, not off the top of my head. Sorry.
No worries, and I appreciate that. I just really want to learn, from you and get your perspective on Japan. And if I may ask, how did you get started in this business or real estate investing?
Why do you mean, or what was the first thing I bought, or what do you mean? How did you start?
I guess what interested you and what did you buy first? Like, what
I
sparked your
started in
interest?
real estate because I wanted to invest in Japan, and the only thing I knew at the time was real estate. So I kind of took my tiny, flimsy little experience that I had and tried to apply it here, made a shitload of mistakes. But in the process, as I was doing it with at the time my business partner, now also my wife, then we went through the motions, and we kind of realized there'd be a lot of foreigners who could use somebody to help them do what we're doing now. So that's how the business started. First thing we invested in was a bulk of three condo units in Kitakyushu City, which is that industrial blue-collar city that I've mentioned, an hour east of Fukuoka. Knowing nothing at the time, we saw Fukuoka Prefecture. We thought it must be similar to Fukuoka City, and we went for those. The agent, being an agent, they're not going to be strategic. He just said, "Yeah, the yield is good. Why don't you buy this one?" And that ended up not being the best of purchases. We got rid of it since, but it did the job for a few years. And since then, we've been collecting little condo units all around the country. At some point, we also bought our office and then our home, and then we sold that home and that office and bought a home office combination, which is where we are now. Since then, so all of those up to that point was cash purchases. Once we were more comfortable with the level of income that we know we can generate, then we also started looking at mortgages, and then we bought a small building and Futsukaichi, which is about an hour, no, less, 30, 40 minutes by train, southeast of Fukuoka City. That's also actually not a bad town to hit. I'm not sure what the population figures are there, but it's quite popular with people who want to be close to Fukuoka but don't want to pay Fukuoka rents. So
I
we got a
see.
mortgage to buy a small building there. Yeah, so I don't know. O over time, getting there.
So when you say condo units, like, so you purchase like condo, like a one unit one condo within
Correct.
like a small building,
Big building.
within a big
Yeah.
building.
Small
Okay.
buildings are usually owned by a single owner. So the kind of wood or steel framed wood buildings that you see a lot of in Japan that are, let's say, 1 to 4 floors, 1 to 3 floors, I'd say, high, they're called aparto and they're usually owned by a single owner. The condo units that we buy individually are usually in the big concrete monsters, the high rises.
Oh, I see. It was that you see that as like a better investment as compared to like a smaller condo, apato.
No, not at all. But at the time, that was our budget, right? We couldn't afford more than that. If you do have the budget, then I'd say an aparto is actually the best of all worlds because you have multiple doors, so multiple income streams, meaning you can get a bit more diversity in hedging. If one tenant moves out, then you've lost, I don't know, 20% of your income stream as opposed to like all of it. It also gives you more flexibility to be more creative with the rental. So you can rent them out commercial, you can rent them out by the month. If the municipality allows it, you can rent them out short-term stay, Airbnb. Whereas within an owner union condo situation, you're not going to be able to do much of that.
Oh, I see.
And you have a bigger land plot compared to the fraction that you get with a condo unit. So you do
Right.
stand to gain more in value if the property is centrally located enough. So if you can swing it, I'd say small apartment buildings are probably the best bang for your buck and more give you more flexibility. But whenever you own the entire structure, there's no reserve fund that's being used for maintenance or anything. You have to set money aside to take care of that if and when that happens. So you'll need to have more liquidity if you're owning an entire structure. But the same thing goes for a house, just bear in mind. So with a house, the structure is entirely on you as well. And that's on average, depending on the age of the property, that could be anywhere from 2 to 5,000 bucks a year on average. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily, ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties. Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
I'm just curious, I just wanted to ask about your scaling strategy when you started out. You said you bought condo units first, and then how did you scale those into,
Bigger and more expensive
better?
properties
Exactly,
by
yeah.
working our asses off and saving as much as we can,
Okay, and did you
like
like rent
everybody
those?
else. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so did you just rent those out long term or okay?
I mean, we're experimenting a bit with monthly rentals, but to be honest, short-term rentals are way too much of a hassle from our perspective. They stand to gain more if they're super well managed and constantly occupied in really attractive properties. But the amount of mental bandwidth that you need to dedicate to looking at the vacancy rates and the occupancy rates and what's the competition doing and what's the good average daily nightly rate and how can I deck out the property to attract more guests. I personally prefer to get a deal, know that it's netting the 4, 5, 6% or whatever it's netting, and then move on to find the next deal. That's our style.
But everyone's different. A lot of people like to sit there and tweak and constantly play and see how much they can get from their Airbnb property. That's a very feasible option too if you get the time on your hands.
And I think I'm more similar to you. I have an investment property out in Las Vegas. Very hands off. I have a property manager. They handle everything. I collect the rents, and if there's any big problems, they call me, and that's about
You're speaking my
it.
language, exactly.
And so yeah, that would be my investment strategy if I ever pursued Japan. But with understanding of my current budget, like it's not so feasible at this
Well, your
moment.
current budget actually allows for better investment, I'd say, than a holiday home. Because if you save just a little bit more, let's say we get to 4, 4.5 million yen, then you could definitely buy a good studio type apartment in a building that's between 20 to 30 years old on purchase and is generating good steady stable monthly income. Whereas if you use that same budget to buy a holiday property, it's going to be either too small for your holiday purposes, or if it's a house, it's going to come with a lot of maintenance and repair expenses and maybe structural damages. So I actually like the idea of putting your budget into a small investment property, running that for a few years and building up the cash to buy something else.
And if we were to go pursue that type of strategy, how would you go about it? Like, which area would you go to? Could you sort of elaborate on that strategy, if you don't mind?
Well, let's assume again that you've saved up to somewhere between 4 to 5 million yen. So, with those cases, all of the locations I've just mentioned, Kumamoto City, maybe suburban Yokohama if we're lucky, Chiba City,
Sub
maybe
Kobe
suburban
or
Osaka, yeah, definitely,
okay.
potentially suburban Kobe, maybe even the outskirts of Fukuoka City itself, if it's like Nishiku, the far west, or Higashiku, the far east, then potentially we could find something within that budget there. As long as it's 10 minutes walk to any station, somebody will want to live there, right? If it's a big enough city.
Because the
So
main
that
form of
makes more
transport is
sense.
walking. Yeah, public transportation.
Because you're buying a studio unit or a one bedroom unit, which means that your tenants are not going to have a car in the vast majority of cases. They're going to be low income earners, entry level salarymen, or
Working class.
a single mom with a toddler kind of thing. Those people usually don't own a car, so the 10-minute walk to a station is really important. And those kind of people rent in cheaper places, so suburban works, right? Kind of the Japanese version of being a slumlord, except we don't really have slums and ghettos and drug labs here. It's more like just hardworking people.
I feel like in a sense it's a less risk.
We have different kinds of problems
perhaps.
here. I mean, you have like destitute retirees, guys that have lived in the same tiny studio for 30 years or 20 years on end, constantly smoke in the room, never open the window, and then sometimes they die in the room too because they're old, right? It's Japan. And then you have all kinds of different headaches to deal with. But yeah, on a regular tenancy base, probably less headaches than being a slumlord in the US, I'd say.
And what are your rights as a landlord? Like, what are the rights that you have to evict, a problem tenant in Japan? Is
That's
it
never an issue in Japan.
okay?
Never an issue.
Because,
It's if they don't pay the rent, then you send them a. Normally, you wouldn't even have to apply to court. You just send them a letter saying, "Hey, you haven't paid the rent for 3 months. Get out," and they'll get out. That's
oh,
usually
great.
what they're not gonna. Japanese are very conflict averse. No one's gonna insist on staying in a property and squat if they're not meant to. The cases where we do have to apply to court is if we have, for example, a lot of our tenants, again, because low income, a lot of our tenants are Southeast Asian students or foreign workers, people who come to work here in convenience stores or factories, stuff like that. And they sometimes just disappear in the middle of a lease, right? Like they go back to their home country, they don't tell anyone. Sometimes they even leave the door open and all of their stuff in the apartment and just take off. In those cases, we have to apply to the court to unilaterally end the lease. Right. And that can take some time, but the tenants that we would agree to take on would have guarantee companies in place, meaning there's an official guarantor who will keep paying the rent until that court order is granted. So you're not in really, I mean, you'll still have to pay for renovation, repair, and cleaning between tenants, but you're not going to have to wait and not. Is that a cat behind you?
Yes. Oops, sorry. I
No,
have two
don't be
cats.
sorry. We got three of them here, and we're just pulling in two strays from the garden too. So there's going to be a fight
Oh,
soon.
that's awesome. Yeah, they're a brother and sister, and they're crazy, so
Well, I mean, it's midnight at where you are now. This is the time they're meant to be crazy, right?
yeah. Every time, like clockwork, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, they just start, playing with each other, and it's
Of
just
course.
okay. That's just cats,
Why do it when
right?
you're awake? It's much more fun to wake you up.
Yeah,
So yeah,
exactly.
those so those kinds of properties would come with a guarantor that will pay until we get that court order to unilaterally end the lease. But we've never, in over 13 years of business and over 300 properties that we help people purchase, we never had to evict anyone forcibly. It just doesn't happen here.
Okay. I mean, that's very great to know because, some states in US are very renter friendly and it
Oh no,
takes about
the laws are tenant oriented in Japan. You can't even enter a property while it's tenanted. There's no inspections, you know, unless the tenant asks you to come in there, you can't. When the lease ends, it's automatically renewed unless the tenant wants to not renew it. Like if you want to not renew the lease, you have to give them a very good reason and pay them compensation worth somewhere between 6 to 10 months of rent, because that's what it costs them to move. Again, if you send them a letter and say, I don't want to renew the lease, so when it expires, please move out, they will most likely not cause a fuss. But if we do happen to land on the single bored old man who will want to take us to court, they would have a legal leg to stand on. So the laws here are very tenant oriented, but the reason they're tenant oriented is because historically, landlords were taking advantage of tenants in Japan. They'd let somebody in, charge them all kind of exuberant fees, and then kick them out 3 months later and kick the cycle off with a new tenant. So the tenant-friendly legislation was put in place to protect the tenants because they really needed protecting. In practice, they're very non-confrontational.
I see. Okay. So I guess this is a little bit best of both worlds, like if the tenant becomes a risk or, if they suddenly abandon the property, you're not at a total loss.
No,
But also if
we're
you're a
usually.
renter, you're very protected and, you won't be kicked out randomly, suddenly. And
Right. Yeah. I think tenancy-wise, we've never had major issues here, and I know that the laws are good to the tenants, so I think Japan's got that balance right. But again, other problems. I mean, if we wanna swap horror stories, like we had a property where a tenant died. Elderly
Oh
tenant
my
died
goodness.
in the bath, full bath in the middle of summer, and it took about a month until somebody discovered it. And the only reason they discovered
Oh
it is
my
because it started to
gosh.
smell.
You a month, right?
I can't even tell you the amount of hassle that was. Just the cleaning and the plumbing that was required after that was a
Right. And is there
nightmare.
like legal implications involved with that?
No
With the
legal
death in your
implications, and
oh,
we
okay.
have when we
Thank
deal with
God.
tenanted. When we deal with tenanted properties, we always put in place a landlord insurance as well, which means that in case somebody dies in the property, the insurance company will pay you a large chunk of money, about $10,000, which is usually enough to renovate a single bedroom or a studio. And they'll also cover you, more importantly, for up to 2 years of missing or reduced rents. Because
Oh,
when a
2 years.
tenant passes in a
Wow.
property, that's the extent of a lease, right? Normally 2 years renewable lease. So when a tenant dies in a property, it carries a stigma in Asia, definitely in
Oh, right.
Japan. So it would be a lot more challenging to reap. Hello. It'd be a lot more challenging to repopulate a property once a tenant's died in there. If they died of natural causes, it's not a huge deal. If it's a murder suicide, could take forever to rent it out again. That insurance policy is very handy.
I see. And if it were the case of the latter, that would have to be disclosed every time you're trying to rent it out to a new tenant.
So officially, they've amended that legislation about a year
Oh,
back to
wow.
say that if it's a natural death, you're not officially obligated to disclose it, only if it's a murder or a suicide.
Oh, then, right.
Then you
Then
do
you
have to
would be.
disclose it, but only to the next
Okay.
buyer or next tenant in line. After that, you can stop telling people about it. But the property managers and the real
Wow.
estate agents that we work with will still disclose that because they don't want to face any kind of, again, they're very conflict averse. They don't want somebody coming and complaining, why haven't you told me down the track? So we would normally still report it regardless of how long has passed.
Okay, for transparency, and you don't want to affect anybody's reputation as well, with anybody you do business with.
And in Rome, I mean, the Japanese tend to be conflict averse. And when we work with Japanese, we try to adopt that mentality as well. We try to keep things as transparent as possible and make sure everything is as smooth as possible. Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in Web Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it. With a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovations comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
And I mean, rewinding a little bit, that's interesting. So, with a 4 to 5 million yen budget, purchasing or pursuing a smaller condo studio sized unit would be not a bad way to
Doable and helps you save
start.
money faster, right? And
Because,
if at
I
some
also.
point, if at some point you've saved enough and you've got, let's say you've got another 4 million yen set aside after you purchase this property because you've been saving the rental income and you've been saving from whatever normal income you have, then we can sell this property and then we'll have 8 million, right?
That's true. Yeah, I never even thought of that possibility. I was sort of averse to multifamily condo structures because I kind of wanted my own, single family, preferably rebuildable property. But, I also do want to just get my leg in the foot in the door of Japan. Japan real estate investing is something I am very interested in. So,
Look, I've got
if
nothing against the idea of buying a holiday home. I would just save up more for that. I
right.
wouldn't. If you want a single family home, I would really highly recommend to start at looking at around 8 million yen.
Right. Okay. And I appreciate that insight
And
because I don't want
some
to.
people say I'm being a bit too loose with that. Like actually, Matt, the Akia Hunter guy, who's probably also on the summit that you watched, he says don't look at less than 11, 12 million yen, otherwise you're gonna get into headaches. So I'm actually kind of less conservative in that. I think we have managed to find slightly cheaper houses for people to buy, which were livable and feasible. But less than that would be pushing it. You'd be buying into a lot of trouble, I think.
I see. I see. Okay. And I value that insight because, I don't want to go in and start calling up real estate agents and showing them my budget, and they're just gonna be like, "What are you even talking about?"
They'll help you, and they as of last July they're allowed to charge a minimum, so they're a lot more open to helping people buy cheaper properties. That used to be a lot more difficult to do it with them because they were only making 500, 600 bucks on a sale of something like that, and then they would shuffle their feet and not return calls and not bother with those properties. But now they're allowed to charge a minimum of 330,000 yen regardless of the price of the property. So they'll help you buy them if you want. They're not gonna, I mean, the realtors by nature are transactional. They're not gonna have the kind of conversation that we just had with you that, okay, that's what you want. Yeah, we'll help you buy that. That'll be it.
But they'll charge you
It's doable.
they'll charge you 330,000 yen on top of your purchase price.
Yeah, realtor commission in Japan is officially 3% plus 60,000 yen plus tax. But if you work that out for a 3 million yen property, sorry. 3 million yen times 0.3% plus 60,000 yen and then plus 10% tax. So that's 165,000 yen. So they're making about $1,000 if they help you buy a property that's 3 million yen, like that one, like your budget is. A lot of them, the amount of work that's involved in them doing that is not worth it. So the legislation is, from my perspective, very welcome because now we can actually work with them on the cheaper properties as well, and they will help us. Giving you a lot to think
And
about there, I think. Sorry.
yeah, no, I greatly appreciate the knowledge. And moving forward, if I could request, 4 to 5 million yen is not a unreachable amount at this point. It's something that could be acquired within the next 6 months to a year. And if the right property was presented with the right rate of return, and with the right investment, moving forward, what would be How would I be able to request services on
To help you buy the
receiving,
investment property.
right? Just like maybe, like sent even like just sending like from realtors, like, hey, this property just came on the market, or hey, this is some off-market property that I just found, or some sort of like insider.
Yeah, well, once you're ready to move ahead with, I mean, the properties here go very quickly, especially the cheaper ones. It's the world's second biggest market or third biggest market, depending if you go by transaction or capital size. But it's a very active liquid market, especially at the lower price levels. So I wouldn't start bothering agents before we get to the point where you can actually pull the trigger. Otherwise, we'll do a few rounds of that and you'll say, okay, let me save up and get back to you in a few months. And eventually, they're not going to return your calls anymore. So once you're ready to pull the trigger, let me know, and I'll either, well, depending on which stage we are. At the moment, we're not onboarding clients for full purchase facilitation because we're a bit swamped. But I can join as a consultant as you work with the agent, just to hold your hand along the way. So that we can do at any time. But again, to make sure that we get good service from those people, let's start talking to them once we can actually do something. And then they'll
Interesting.
research for you on a regular basis. They'll give you potential listings. We'll analyze and review them together until we land on the one. With condo units as well, we don't need structural inspections or anything of that sort because the structure is not our responsibility. The due diligence will consist more of us trying to understand how the building is managed. So we look at the reserve fund situation, how much they've got collected to date, what kind of big renovations that they've done in the last 10 years. And we'll try to assess whether they've got enough money for the next big renovation that's going to come up. Because if they don't, they're going to jack up the building fees a lot quicker than they would otherwise.
Oh, I see.
So the
Okay.
due diligence there is more paperwork related. It's not structural inspections like with the houses,
I see. I see.
which also means
Okay.
it's a bit cheaper to buy a condo unit because you don't need to structurally inspect it.
Okay. And that's funny because my property in Vegas is a condo unit too. But also, like, in relation, here we have HOA, which is like homeowners association fee.
Yeah, they're
In
not the
Japan.
demons. They're not the demons that you're used to, and I know how horrible
Oh.
they are in the U.S. They're fine here. It's not a. I mean, some of them take slightly less better care of the building. Like maybe they're not managing it super well, but they're never. They don't hit you with late fees. Put their hand in your pocket. They're not monsters here.
Okay. And how much percentage would you say on average do they ask? Or, I mean, are there like monthly fees that you have to pay to the building
Yeah,
entity
so
or?
you pay. There's two monthly fees. One is a management fee for, power and water for common areas, cleaning, gardening. If it's a big
Like
building, there might be
utilities.
an on-site manager, that kind of thing. Utilities for the common areas, not for the units. The units,
Oh,
the
okay.
tenants will pay for the utilities within the units themselves.
Okay.
And the other fee that they charge is a reserve fund contribution, which goes into the reserve fund and will be used for renovations and repairs when those are needed. There's no rule of thumb on how much they are. They vary a lot depending on how fancy the building is and how old it is. Older buildings require more renovation and repair. Nicer buildings require more on-site management. So it could be anywhere from, I don't know, 60, $70 a month and all the way up to $300, $400 a month for really fancy buildings.
That's still not bad.
It's not, I mean, depends on how
Yeah.
much income you're getting from it. It's an investment property, right? So if you're paying
True.
$400 in monthly fees and you're getting $400 in rental income, it doesn't make much sense.
That's true. Yeah. That's
But
true.
so that's the building fees for the property manager. So the building management company is appointed by the owner union. You don't have any choice in that matter. The property manager was the person who's actually the company was actually going to be dealing with your tenant in your unit. Those we will appoint on your behalf, or you'll appoint them yourselves. And they charge 5% plus tax, so 5.5% of the gross monthly rent.
That's okay.
Oh, on average, I mean, there are some companies that charge a bit less, some companies that charge a bit more, but the industry standard is about is 5.5%.
Okay, and that's nice because average is about 8% for property management.
But they also charge a placement fee. When they place a new tenant, they will charge 1 or 2 months of rent, depending on whether they found them themselves or if they had to share the listing with other property managers. They'll
Okay.
charge 1 or 2 months of rent when they place a new tenant. If the particular time of year or the rent that you're asking for is making it a bit more difficult to find a tenant, then it might end up costing you 3 or 4 months of rent because we'll offer, for example, first month rent free. For whatever, or the owner will pay for your move-in expenses, or will offer a higher commission to a property manager who brings us a tenant double quick. So, in difficult times, it might get to be 3, 4 months of rent in placement fees, but normally 1 or 2.
Okay. And with these property managers, is it is communication pretty easy, like through phone, through a communication app or?
You, in the vast majority of cases, you're not going to be communicating with them yourself. They'll be traditional Japanese company, and you'll need somebody to handle the communications with them. Same with the building management company, insurance company, tax department.
Oh,
You
okay.
will need a proxy unless you're in central Tokyo, central Niseko, places where there are more foreigner-friendly professionals to work with. But your budget, again, is not going to bring you to those places. So you'll most likely need a proxy, someone like us, or if it's a short-term stay or monthly property, then yes, there are because those companies need to cater to tourists, so they tend to be more foreigner friendly and they can handle foreign landlords as well. But if it's a typical long-term lease arrangement, that's going to be a traditional Japanese company. You'll need a proxy for that.
Okay. And you provide those services or
Yes, we do.
NTI.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. Oh. Okay. All right. I think I have a pretty good understanding of what my next steps are.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of the basics. That was a good call.
Yeah, mainly budget. But I do have a better understanding of which routes I could take for, in terms of investing, but also the other route of.
Preparation for the other thing. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Cool. So keep me posted on your savings situation, and
Will do.
we'll take it up again once it's a bit more relevant.
Okay, you'll be
Awesome.
the
Thanks for your
first one I
time.
call. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Talk to you soon. So there you have it. Nice detailed conversation about quite a few topics. Always happy to have conversations about these hybrid strategies, holiday homes versus investment rentals, condos versus houses, different types of tenants and so forth. And again, the best time and place to hear about all of these topics directly from the horse's mouth, so to speak, and to network with a whole bunch of people who are in this market, same as you are. Is our summit coming in just under 2 weeks at the Tokyo International Forum and online via streaming. Head over to summit.realestate.jp and grab your tickets today. We cannot wait to see you all there with us. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.